The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Chapter 32, verse 9. Now, we left off with the Jewish people doing the sin of the golden calf. And we've already explained that, according to the Ramban, Nachmanides, the chet, egel zahav, the sin of the golden calf, is predominantly a sin in mind more than in action. Because there was a real small percentage of people that actually took that golden calf for an idol and began to worship it. But predominantly what they did is what's called in Kabbalah mekatzet b'nitiyot. They separated the reed. Right? What they did is they appealed to the attribute of Gvura. They appealed to the attribute of Gvura. We know there are 10 sefirot. And, of course, we never pray to the Sefirot, we never really relate to the Sefirot, we relate to God. And just as much as perhaps someone would call me Rabbi, you're not relating to Rabbi. Rabbi is only a name through which you then contact me, which is beyond any name. You follow. And so could you imagine when you begin to relate to people's names, rather than to the person themselves that goes beyond the name and only use the name as an entrance into that direct encounter, so then what you're doing in a certain way is creating a graven image. Right? You're no longer relating anymore. We, in a certain metaphorical way, compare this a little bit to what could happen in business, where business becomes a science of relationships. Right? It's not really authentic relationship. There's a certain science of what you should say to elicit which type of response, right? I mean, everyone's familiar with that. You walk into a store, the person knows, they've been taught, they're supposed to say, "Oh, good day," right? And then that will elicit the person feeling more comfortable with you, and they'll say, "Oh, hello," right? And that's really a science, that's not relationship. That's not really touching in an authentic way an encounter of two souls, right? But it's really, really a science. So, in a manner of speaking, what the Jewish people did with the Chet HaEgel is they scientized Judaism. Right? They had a face-to-face encounter with God at Sinai, and they came to real deep clarities of God and God's names, and yet the creating the golden calf is taking that real heartful, authentic, personal relationship and transforming it into a very manipulative type of science. We need a Moses, we need some kind of leader, so we appeal to the attribute of Gvura, because we're in a place of Gvura. They're being too calculating. Now, there's nothing wrong with science. What's wrong with science is only if it's instead of compassion, instead of relationship. The thing that the Jewish people should have done is, instead of coming up with some kind of logical solution, things do not go according to their plan. They calculated Moses to return a certain date, and when he did not return, instead of just turning their hearts to Hashem and asking for direction without any chachma, in an avoda pashut, you know, Rav Nachman of Breslov talks about this idea a lot, this idea of simple avoda, without too much chachma, without too much thinking and calculating, but just that pure, sincere. If they would have turned to Hashem, but that's not what they did. They first turned to their minds, they turned to their logic, and they tried to figure out, well, what exactly do we have to do in order to elicit the type of response and direction we need in the situation we're in? And that's taking Torah and making it into a science. Okay, so God says to Moses, "Your people have sinned, and go down to the people, because I'm going to wipe them out." Yeah. As we mentioned the other day, the desert is itself under the influence of Gvura. It reflects power, because the desert is desolation. Right? The desert is it reflects din in Judaism. And gold also is connected to din in Judaism, judgment in Gvura. And therefore, and also a shore, an ox, is connected to din in Gvura. These are all expressions of Gvura in the world. They all reflect that attribute. And therefore, they had it all worked out. You see, that's the problem, right? When you're in a relationship, you should not have it all worked out, right? Because then it's a science. It's not a relationship. So the Jewish people had a scientific answer to their problem. It's a spiritual science, right? Science is not necessarily just physical. There are also spiritual sciences. We dealt with the other day how a person could take Torah and transform it from that heartful relationship with Hashem into this another science, a cause and effect. If you do mitzvahs, you get the world to come. If you don't do mitzvahs, you go to hell. If you do this, you get that. If you do this, you get that. But do not serve the king in order to get a prize, because then it's not a relationship. It's a science. Okay? Whatever they were doing, I mean, there are various opinions of what exactly they were doing, but whatever they were doing, they were being calculating in trying to derive the kind of direction they need, rather than simply in a heartful way turning to Hashem, okay? Without all your chachmot, without all your logic. Nothing's wrong with your logic. What's wrong is it took priority over the compassionate relationship that one would beseech of Hashem. That's what's wrong with it, right? When your solutions come before just simply calling out to God, then your solutions can create a graven image. Okay? That's what's wrong. But after you turn to Hashem, then of course your responsibility is to come up with some solutions. Okay? It's a matter of order. So Hashem says, I have seen that this nation is an amkshe oret. This is a stiff-necked people. This is where we see this idea of stiff-necked people. You understand, what does it mean that the Jewish people are stiff-necked people? Does it mean that they need many chiropractors? I mean, what is this supposed to mean that they are stiff-necked people? So, Rashi says, well, they do not listen to tochacha. They do not listen to rebuke, which, of course, is a pshat. But another pshat that the Ibn Ezra brings down is they do not listen to he was commending. Terrible to a human being who is walking, and if someone calls them, they do not turn their heads. That's a very beautiful metaphor. Because stiff-necked people would mean that if someone calls you, you do not turn to answer. And therefore, this is the people who are not yet ready for a relationship with God. A relationship means if I call you, you turn and you answer. If I'm going in this direction, and this is the beautiful mashal of the Ibn Ezra, if a person is walking and someone calls you, you do not bother to turn around to respond. I mean, if this is the way I'm going, so if a person should call, I'm not flexible, I'm not ready to change my direction because I recognize that the only direction I ever want to go is in relationship to you. So therefore, the idea of the Amkshe Oreth, again, I believe, enhances this concept of, are you in a relationship with God, or did you find a new spiritual science? Right? A new spiritual science. People can treat mitzvahs like a science. Cause and effect. You do this, you get this, you do this, you get that. That's not the point of mitzvahs. The point of mitzvahs is to enter into a relationship with God, and to create a world, which is a world of relationship between mankind. So God says, this is a stiff-necked people. They are not the type of people who are ready for a relationship, ready to turn their head when they hear the call. So God then says, verse 10, and now let me be, for my anger will and my wrath will burn upon them, and I will destroy them, and I will make you a great nation. Now this is really unbelievable, because what does it mean, let me be? Let me be. So the Gemara in Brachot says that if it wouldn't have been written, we could never have said this. But it's like a person who grabs their friend by their clothing, holding them back from doing what they don't want to do. Saying, and so Moses grabbed God, so to speak, by his clothing, and said, and these are the words of the Gemara, Rabbono shel Olam, I will not let you go until you forgive the people. Now, I mean, that is an unbelievable metaphor. Now, just to appreciate the kind of images between the human relationship with God that Judaism offers. Right? That Judaism offers. But then again, is this not chutzpah of Moses to do this? I mean, where did Moses get such chutzpah to, so to speak, grab God by his clothing and say, I'm not letting you go, and say, Rabbona Shel Olam, which means master of the universe. That's the beauty of the very, you know, the precise words of the Gemara. It's like, master of the universe! Right? You're saying master of the while you're holding his clothing, say, I'm not letting you go until you pardon the people. So, the Midrash says that this is very similar to a king who is angry with his son. He's yelling at his son, and then one of his beloved friends walk in and says to his son, if it wouldn't be for Joe, I'd knock you out right now. So at that point, Joe recognized that, oh, I could say something, I could stop someone. So Joe goes, hey, king, how could you do this? So too, when God said, let me be, that was God's cue to Moses that if you pray, I won't do this. Now what is this, a joke? Right? I mean, it's like very strange. Let me be or I'll wipe them out. No. I mean, it's like a strange thing to say. That God is inviting Moses to stop him. You see this. Right? And this is the pshat, right? Rashi brings it down. God gave him an opening, telling them that if you don't pray for them, I'll wipe them out. But if you do pray for them, I won't. Now, what is that all about? So, let's think about this. God is inviting man to pray. And this is a principle throughout the entire Torah. How does God create a human being? By creating a situation for that human being to make a choice. That takes us all the way back to the 6 days of creation. On the sixth day of creation is when God said, do not eat of the tree. And it was precisely on the sixth day of creation that the man and woman ate of the tree. Now, why is that story during the 6 days of creation? Because that story is part of how you create a human being. How do you create a human being? If you create a human being, in the process, you would destroy them. Because a human being has a sense of self. A human being, by definition, is a person who takes responsibility and makes choices. Right? A robot does not take responsibility or make choices, but a human being does. So how do you create a human being? You create a human being by creating a situation for that human being to make a choice. And therefore, God is creating Moses. God is creating the people. God is creating the possibility for a man to enter into relationship with God. And so God opened the door. And what was Moses' approach? What does he say to God? Verse 11, Moses falls on before Hashem, beseeching God, and says, God, why are you going to be upset with your nation that you took out of Egypt with a great power and a strong hand? You realize, what did Moses say? What should have Moses said? And he should have confessed, the nation has sinned, and we're very sorry, and please, you know, Rabban Shalom, and supplication. What does Moses say? Well, he's not really reprimanding God. He says, why are you upset? Why get upset with your people that you have taken out of Egypt with a great hand? This is very, very strange. And he continues to say, why should you allow the Egyptians to say, Bira, in evilness, you have taken them out to kill them and to destroy them off the face of the earth. Right? So please, change your mind. Remember Avram, Yitzhak, Yisrael, your servants that you had taken an oath that you will increase their seed like this, stars of the earth. And so God said, okay, what is Moses' approach? What is Moses' approach? Now, you have to appreciate that Moses takes another approach a little bit later when he returns on the mountain. And when he turns on the mountain back, he says in verse 32, please accept their sin. Can you not bear their sin? Ana chata amazeh chata gedola, this nation has sinned. He does vidui, he confesses. So if you see that in verse 31 and in verse 32, Moses over there confesses before Hashem and pleads for rachamim, then what is this approach in contrast? He's not pleading for rachamim. He's not in any way confessing on behalf of the nation. What is he doing? Well, what he's saying, according to some of the commentaries, is why, this is the Ramban. The Ramban says, why allow your attribute of judgment to dominate your nation that you took out with your great name from Egypt in the attribute of compassion? You hear this? God, the name of this play is compassion. The taking out of the Jewish people of Egypt is a demonstration of unconditional love. If you wipe them out, that will be the last scene of this play. Because then the Egyptians will say that God took them out, Birah. And what does Birah mean? Right? So even Ezra says, and Rashi says in another place, Birah is actually a star. Right? This is verse 12. Why let the Egyptians say Birah? Under the constellation of Ra'a, you took them out. And the Ibn Ezra then says, and they will say, you see, God was not able to overcome the natural forces. The God of the Jews could not overcome the natural forces. The Jews had to die. And that's what it says before when Pharaoh said, let the people go. It says over there, he saw that Ra'a was coming towards them. And Rashi brings down over there the Midrash that he saw the constellation, he saw according to the zodiac, according to astrology, that really astrologically they won't make it. Right? And so remember, the whole story of taking the Jews out of Egypt is the testimony that what governs the universe are not impersonal natural forces. What governs the universe is a compassionate, personal, willing God. And that's what Moses is saying. Moses is saying, why do this? Because what this will do will undermine the very manifestation of the truth that the world is run by a compassionate God. And that compassionate God can override din, can override rules. So by destroying the people, you are destroying the revelation of your truth in the world. That's an amazing idea. That's an amazing idea, but it's not so amazing because it's actually reflected even in our prayers. When we ask God to pardon us, we say, because you pardon. This is your manifestation. Don't do it for us. I have no merit in and of ourselves. Moses could not say something on behalf of the people. What could he say on behalf of the people? He's speaking on behalf of God. He's saying, on behalf of you, Ribbono Shel Olam, this will only damage the revelation of the divine as a personal, compassionate, willing reality. And it will undermine the very purpose of taking the Jewish people out and the destruction of Egypt, which is the deification of natural principles. That's what idol worship is. Idol worship is a science. Science is, could be, not always, is could be a deification of laws. There are laws. There's cause and effect. There's no relationship. That's the way it goes. But God taking the Jewish people out of Egypt, bringing din upon the Egyptians and yet compassion upon the people, is the testimony that we believe that the primary reality is a compassionate, willing, personal God. Now, of course, we can't help but ask, does God need to hear this from a man? I mean, do you actually think that, Moses is really innovating something quite brilliant over here? And God says, oh, you know, Moses, I didn't really think of that. Oh, you know, I was being a little rash over here. You're right. I was kind of losing my temper, Moses. And you're right. I could have just destroyed my whole play. My whole thing. You're right. I'm so happy you said that because I really, that would be the end. I mean, do we really think that God needs this? Well, it's obvious. God said, let me be. Right? And God gave the cue. Go for it, Moses. You see, Moses is drawing the consciousness into the world. You see, unless a human being recognizes it, it's not going to be in the world. It's not going to be in the world. This is what God allows man, the possibility to recognize divine truth. Because it was this divine truth that the Jewish people themselves were not recognizing. Had they recognized it, they would not have scientized the whole experience at Sinai. What they would have done is again turn to the compassion of God. But they didn't. And so Moses is to a certain extent bringing about a tikkun for the people because he, with such incredible chutzpah, and he, it says, v'yichal means that he gave himself up to die. To have the guts as a human being to say, but this whole show is compassion, Rabbanu Shel Olam. Right? The whole show is compassion. That's what the name of this game is. The name of life is compassion. And cause and effect in din is a function of compassion. It's an expression of compassion. But will never undermine compassion. And therefore Moses, God is giving Moses the possibility to create the vessel through his asking for this, for his presenting this, for his realization of this. This becomes the vessel for that to come into the world. Okay? To bring it into the world. Okay, and so, what Moses is doing is establishing the consciousness in the world. And remember all the way back to the story of Abraham. When Abraham was pleading for Sodom, there was a certain point where he felt he couldn't go on. Right? There was a certain point that he felt he couldn't go on. After 10 tzaddikim, he said, okay, that was the end of the conversation. Right? But it is Moses here who's going on. Right? And remember we talked about it before, that Lot asks God to save a city that Abraham himself could not save. And that was because Lot, who wasn't considered to be a great guy, had that kind of chutzpah, even asked that of God. But he has a chutzpah, but it's not a chutzpah that's born in a state of surrender to Hashem. And Moses here has holy chutzpah. This is the holy chutzpah. But God says, go for it. That it will be that opening up, that recognition, that chutzpah to say, God, would you do that? God didn't have to hear that. Moses has to hear it, and we have to hear it from a human being. If he would have heard it from God, it's not the same thing. We have to hear it from a human being, and therefore God allows this Torah, so to speak, to come through the mouth of a human being. Huh? Very powerful. Very powerful. So the Midrash brings down, or actually this is a parish on the Midrash, that the reason why God hurled all these accusations at and threats against Israel was in fact so to arouse Moses to pray on behalf of Israel. And it says that Moses' defense protects us until today. Right? Until today, he brought that into the world. He brought that kind of relationship in the world that will protect us. Okay. So that's, you see, that's what we have to appreciate about Moses. It's one thing God giving the Torah, it's another thing bringing it down. And you know, we talk about this many times when we talk about, you know, Rashi brings down, the Ramban brings down. What are they bringing down? I mean, when you're a rabbi and you get in front of a number of people who are not religious, start talking about, and the Midrash brings down, you say, bringing down, what does that mean? It means that God gives man the possibility to participate in the manifestation of divine truth in the world. And you can bring it down. Right? And God is offering Moses the opportunity to bring it down. Okay, so the next scene is, and of course Moses says, remember Avram, Yitzchak, and Yisrael, for you established a covenant. You took an oath of love. So all of this is based on unconditional love. Okay? Unconditional love. So this is basically what Moses asks for, right? Isn't the name of this play unconditional love? Isn't that what you established with the forefathers? And so God says, okay, fine. Now, verse 15. So Moses turns to go down off the mountain, and he's got two tablets of testimony in his hand that are written on two sides. Okay? Verse 16. And the tablets are
a product of Elohim. Va'aluchot ma'ase Elohim hema, va'michtav michtav Elohim hu, charut al haluchot. Right? The tablets are a product of Elohim, the writing of Elohim, and it says, and Yeshua heard the voice of the nation. He said to Moses, this sounds like a voice, a call of war. And Moses says, no, it's not a call of war. And he goes down, he sees the cow. He sees the golden cow. He sees everyone dancing. Moses gets upset. And he breaks the tablets, throws them down. And this is unbelievable. Why does it say over here, of all places, that the luchot are the luchot of Elohim, and the writing is the writing of Elohim? Right? Why does it say that here? Why is that important? Moses is with these luchot. We know he got them from God. Right? But the pasuk is emphasizing over here, you've got to really recognize what this Torah is. Because if you recognize what this Torah is, you will appreciate what Moses did. So the Chizkuni says, to tell you how great these tablets are and what they were missing, okay? You have to understand that the first tablets were tablets of Elohim written by Elohim. So you have to know what they lost. They lost the tablets of Elohim. Now let's think about that. What does it mean, the tablets of Elohim? We learned about it before. The name Elohim is the attribute of judgment and doom. And that the Torah is given as din, meaning you get what you deserve. That is the greatest gift that God will give man. The greatest gift is God, Yud Kei Vav Kei, the compassionate one, being unto man an Elohim, judicious, relating to your actions, imparting divine significance to your actions. Right? That's what's great about the Torah. The Torah is God's gift to man to help you get what you deserve. And that creates a human being that makes you like a God. Right? Because you create yourself, you make choices, you take consequences. This is a fantastic level, and realize that all that is an expression of love. The parent out of great love creates a judicial system for their child so that they can cultivate their child to be like their parents, taking their lives in their hands, making choices. So the luchot are actually on an incredibly high level. And that level is going to be lost, because the next luchot will be only a luchot of compassion. See, that's the point. When you get din out of compassion, that's the highest level. But when you get compassion without any element of din, there's actually something really missing. So, what Moses did over here is he took the greatest Torah and broke it. This was the highest opportunity. They were getting a Torah that's written by God as an Elohim. Of course, from God is Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is to offer the human being to be like an Elohim by making choices and getting what they deserve. It's the highest level. And that's what a parent will do out of love for their child. Right? But being that that's out of love, if what you deserve is death, then out of love the parent will be patient. Right? So you'll override the dream. Of course. So now, the Ramban says that this pasuk is not only telling us, like the Chizkuni says, to tell you what they missed. They lost that Torah. That incredible level of Torah. The Ramban says to tell you how incredible Moses is. They had the guts to break that Torah. Now we've got to think about that. What in fact did Moses do? What did he do? How could he break that Torah? Where did he get the right to take the Torah that God gave him? It's so quite amazing, because God just said, go down to your people, they are sinning, and then what does it say? And God gave him the Torah. It's not like God said, I'm not giving these people a Torah, forget it. No, it doesn't say that. God gives him the Torah, right? And Moses, with this two luchot, comes walking down,
He himself sees what the people did, and he takes the Torah that God gave him. Well, the question is, what was the anger about? Right? That's the question. Right? What did he do? Right? How could he break the Torah? What was his consideration? You see, it goes all the way back to the essence of what Torah is. The Midrash says that the elders saw that Moses was about to throw down the Torah. So the 70 elders ran towards him, and the Midrash presents a scene of the elders struggling, and Moses, no, no, and the elders say, no, we want it, we want it. You see this? It's a very strange image. So Moses is about to throw it down. The elders see this, like, quickly grab it out of his hand, and we've got this tug-of-war scene where Moses is trying to take it because he wants to break it. And he says, no, no, don't break it, don't break it. And he takes it, and he pulls it away from him, and he breaks it. It's a fantastic scene. They missed all the best scenes in that movie, no? Okay, and so what did Moses do? So the Midrash says that he saw that the words on the Torah had already flown off the Torah. He saw it, what the elders didn't see it. What did Moses see and what did the elders not see? Moses saw that the essence, the spirit of the Torah was gone. It was gone. So the Midrash says that when Moses saw that the words of the Torah left it, then the Torah just became stone. Lifeless stone. And it became heavy, and the Midrash suggests that actually he didn't really throw it down. He couldn't hold it anymore. Okay? And of course, the Midrash knows what it says over here, so what's it trying to explain to us? What did Moses see? He saw the essence of Torah missing. You know what the essence of Torah is? It's the relationship with God. It's not a science. You do these mitzvahs, you get this reward. Right? It's a relationship with God. And when he saw those people dancing around that idol, he saw, I can't give them the Torah, because they don't have the fundamental foundation that makes the Torah meaningful. It's called relationship with God. They turn their backs on God. What good is the Torah? The Torah are derivative activities which reflect a fundamental relationship of love between the Jews and God. And if that's not there, then what is the Torah? It's just stone. It's just stone. So what are the elders arguing for? The elders say, no, no, we want the Torah, we want the Torah, let's give them the Torah. No, no, don't throw that Torah down. No, no, don't keep that Torah. What are you doing? What, you're trying to hold on to those little activities when the spirit of it all is gone? What's the point of it all if the spirit of it all is gone? You see, although it's a bit of a crude metaphor, but I think it's important, it's like sex without love. Because sex is just an action. Right? And if it's not an expression of the love, well then not only does it not express love, it'll interfere. It'll interfere. That's why Judaism has laws like premarital sex is forbidden, because it's only for your own good. It'll actually get in the way of the love that you could create, because the foundation is missing. And so Moses saw that the spirit of the law had been broken already. The tablets were already broken. Right? It was all over. The love was missing. So what? So you're going to tell these people put on tefillin? They have no sense of devotion to God yet. And this, to a certain extent, is something I see today. There are certain rabbis that sometimes feel this almost compulsive need to get the people doing the acts without trying to get the people to understand the devotion. That without the devotion, those acts are really meaningless. Are you trying to create robots? I mean, would I feel comfortable if I successfully injected all of Am Yisrael with some kind of serum? That tomorrow morning they wake up, I take over the radio station, I say, Jews, put on tefillin. And the Jews say, yes, we put on tefillin. Do you think that'll be a great success for the Jewish people? Do you want to give them that Torah?
don't you realize that if they don't have a sense of emunah, if they don't have a sense of devotion, what good is giving them all these laws? It only get in the way. So the rabbis are saying, no, we want things, let's give it to them. He says, you're scientists, right? I'm not willing to play this game. Like, you're just scientists. To give them a bunch of activities outside the context of what they represent, what's it going to do? Right? So he threw it down. So the question is, what did Moses see that got him so upset? What is it that he saw that got him so angry? I mean, he knew. What was the Kiddush? God said they're doing this. What, he had to see this? What did he see that really blew his mind? I mean, God said to him that they're down there idol worshiping. They're down there. Look what they did. Right? And Moses pleads, and he stops God from destroying the nation. Then he goes down, he sees himself, and then he throws down the tablet. What did he see? What was new? What, he didn't see that before? He didn't believe God? So look at the pasuk very carefully. What did he see? Verse 19. V'yar et ha'egol u'mecholot. He saw the eagle and the dancing. That he didn't know. You see, it's one thing if they created a golden calf. It's another thing if they're happy. They're dancing. That's what the Sforno says. The Sforno says when he saw that, he was despaired. He said, what could I do at the point where he saw that they were happy in what they had damaged? What are you going to do then? You see, it's one thing if the people saw themselves in a vidyevit situation. Where's Moses? Where's Moses? We're in trouble. We need something. And if we're grasping for some kind of here, of solution, they created something which is certainly not the initial. Certainly not what they wanted. But when you're happy, then that shows that you're not disappointed. And you're not disappointed. And if you're not disappointed, then he saw that the fundamental relationship with God was already broken. The fact that they created a cow, okay, maybe there's still a certain element of relationship with God still there, and because they're human and they were looking for human ways to figure out the situation with great disappointment and sadness, then okay. But when he saw that they were rejoicing, and he saw that the essence was missing, he saw that they don't want the Torah. That's the point. They don't really want it. Because if they would have wanted it, they would have waited. And if they would have wanted it, then they would have maybe created this golden cow, but with real great disappointment, with a sorrowful eye, they would have done what they thought maybe they had to do. With Gavalt, I wish we had that relationship. But they didn't have that. They were happy. You see, at that point when he sees they're happy, he saw there's no point in giving the Torah to the people. You see, this is another thing. If they don't want it, you can't give it to them. You can't give it to them. If you prove to the Jewish people that the Torah is the will of God, then they'll accept it like a science. You don't want that. Before you prove to them that it's the will of God, you first have to get them to want to receive the will of God. And therefore the elder said, let's give them the Torah. Moses said, I can't give them the Torah if they don't want it. But if they don't want it, then the acceptance of the Torah will not be on behalf of relationship with God. It will be just another science. It'll just be a continuation of this whole golden cow story. You don't understand. You'll destroy the Torah that way. The soul of the Torah is missing. This is just rock. This is just stone. This is as meaningless as that golden cow. Don't you see it? And so he broke the tablet. And he did it for the Jews. He did it for the Jews. He didn't do it for himself. The Midrash says this is similar to a matchmaker that made a match and they get married, and then there's a rumor that the woman was unfaithful to her husband, so the matchmaker quickly rips up the marriage contract so that she will not be judged as a married woman, but as if she would did it as a single woman. What is that supposed to mean? Right? Moses felt better they not get the Torah. Because if they have the Torah, then they're really responsible. then they're really in trouble. And I think there's so much here that teaches us about giving the Torah today to the people. What do we have to do for the people before we can give it to them? You've got to first develop the sense of emunah, the devotion. And we've got to develop the sense of we want it. I mean, I've just seen too many Baal Tshuvas who are faithfully miserable being from. The saddest thing. The saddest thing. In their hearts, they're still rejoicing over the golden cow that, well, at least 20 years of my life, I was able to rejoice in a golden cow. But now, what can I say? I'm from, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's truth. I mean, you know, I guess that's the price you pay. You got to be miserable. When Moses saw that they were rejoicing over that cow, then they're not ready. They're just not ready. I think he was angry at the situation. He was angry at the point, I mean, he was angry that they weren't ready. He wasn't angry at them, so to speak, because the Midrash says that he does it out of love. We know Moses. We know Moses goes up. So we have to put everything within the context of his personality. But he was certainly angry. No, it's not an angry action. We'll get to that in a second. The Gemara says that when Moses broke the tablets, God said, Yasher Koah. Way to go. Way to go. And it is so important to see these midrashim because the Torah without the midrashim is lifeless also. You can't really get to its essence. God, in fact, confirmed. But it had to be Moses to break the Torah. It couldn't be God to break the Torah. It had to be a Jewish leader. It had to be that Torah educator who had to be the first one to break the Torah, then break the people in giving them a Torah they're not ready for. What? Better break the Torah than the people. They're not ready. And therefore, you've got to be a realistic educator if you're going to go out and give people the Torah. What you've got to first do, instead of standing on your haughty mountain with your big Torah in your hand and say, here's the Torah, you've got to get off the mountain, and you've got to get down there, and you've got to express to the people the opportunity of that love and compassionate relationship with God. And you've got to cultivate their will. You've got to want it. Before you can prove it to them, which is important. Don't get me wrong, it's important. They've got to want it. Because if a person doesn't want the Torah, and you prove to them that it's true, and they've got to keep it, you've broken them. And I've seen those kind of people. I've seen those kind of people. They weren't ready. They didn't want the Torah. And yet you convinced them that they should get it. And now they are miserable. Now they're miserably from. And it's a big tikkun to try and fix that. It's not an easy thing. You've got to cultivate the will. You've got to cultivate the desire. You've got to once again establish the foundation. The soul of the Torah is the relationship with God. And the actions are an expression of that. And if you are doing the action prior to the emunah, then it's like learning Torah lo lishma. Learning Torah not for its sake is deadly, as it says in the Midrash. The same Torah. The same thing. Saying to someone, I love you, if it's within the context of relationship, will only enhance that relationship. But saying to a person, I love you, before you really mean it, might actually create a wall to being able ever to say it and mean it. Because now you think you do when you really don't. So Moses broke the Torah. He understood the essence of the Torah. He understood the relationship of the Torah. And he understood, better I break this Torah than break the people. He did it for the people. He did it for their sake. And God said, Yasher Koah, way to go. It's only that kind of leader who can be the leader that can bring that kind of Torah to the people once again. It's got to be someone like a Moses. It's got to be someone like a Moses. Okay, so, you see, when he saw that they were rejoicing, he saw that they don't really want it. And this is something that we really have to know. Right? We really have to know. There's a Gemara that says that had the first tablets not been broken, Torah would never have been forgotten from the world, from the Jewish people. Right? And it reminds me of another midrash that says, any mitzvah that the Jewish people received and accepted in simcha, in joy, they continue to do. They continue to do. It's got to be a positive experience. You know, a kid who's raised in a religious family and didn't see the joy in the Torah, didn't see the opportunity in the Torah, didn't really want it, but had it forced upon him. You can be sure that they're going to lose it. They're going to forget it. It has to be the foundation of receiving the Torah. It must be joy. It must be joy. And so when Moses saw them rejoicing in the golden calf, he saw that they were really in their essence still not rejoicing in the receiving of the Torah. They can't get it. They can't get it. To a certain extent, you see, okay, let's face it. Some Jews have to live outside of Israel. They've got their own personal accountings. That's not the problem. The problem is, are you enjoying it? That's the problem. Are you happy? That's really the question. The question isn't whether you're going to come or not. The question is, do you really want to come? And then, okay, you'll figure it out. Maybe right now you can't. But the question is, when you find out you can't, are you like deep down inside really happy you can't? Because if you're deep down inside really happy you can't, then you didn't want it in the first place. And therefore, you'll never get it. So Moses understood the prerequisites to accepting the Torah. He understood that it has to be accepted upon the foundation of really wanting to relate to God. Out of relationship to God, emunah and devotion, out of wanting to relate to God, and out of joy. Without those three criterias, giving them the Torah would only break the people. It would only break the people. Okay, so Moses goes down, and he judges the people. They, according to some commentaries, they held court. 3,000 people were in fact killed because 3,000 people did in fact do idol worship. The rest of the nation's sin was more in mind than in action, but there were 3,000 who in fact did do idol worship, which is punishable by death. And Moses grinds up the golden cow and has them drink it. Similar to the idea of sota, there's an idea in Judaism that a person who is unfaithful drinks this certain potion to see if they're really unfaithful. And of course, the images over here are again suggesting the whole image of getting the Torah at Sinai is the image of marriage with God. That's the image. Right? They reach that level of ezer kenegda, a helpmate that is parallel to. That was the lofty level that the Jewish people had reached. And yet they had lost it. They really were not ready for it. And so the next scene is Moses goes up and he pleads on behalf of the people. Right? The first time Moses was there, he simply, his concern was to stop God from destroying the people. But now that he went down, now that he recognizes the sin, now he comes up to get pardon for the people. And therefore, that's the understanding of the second going up. And he says something that's really amazing. He says, if you do not pardon the people, then I want you to wipe me out of your book. I don't want my name in this book. Now, Rashi says, what does that mean? Rashi says, I don't want anyone to ever say that I wasn't worthy. Right? I don't want anyone to ever say that I was not worthy to ask for the people compassion. And I think certainly one understanding of that is, Moses says, if I am not worthy to ask compassion, then I do not belong in this book. Because this book, this drama, is the drama of God's lesson for the Jewish people. Right? Itself, part of God's love for mankind. And therefore, Moses says, if you do not if you do not answer, and part of the night, I don't want to be in the book, because that means that I wasn't worthy to bring your compassion in the world, so how could I be part of this book, which is all about God's love for the Jewish people? One last idea. God then says to the people, I will send my angel, I will not personally direct you. God says to the people, remove the crowns, and then Moses himself takes his tent and goes outside the camp of the Jewish people. Right? And the question is, why does he do all this? Right? And that's what we're going to start off with tomorrow. Right? What is now God's response to the Jewish people? And of course, think of it in terms of fixing the situation, right? By understanding what was the problem.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.